Good morning, Matt Walvin. How are you this fine day?
I'm doing pretty well. I'm trying to wear out the dog here at my left shoulder, but we'll see. Or my right shoulder, but your left shoulder to see.
Speaking of wearing things out, it's been a full week now. If anyone isn't aware, the rookie scouting portfolio. If you're not aware, where the hell have you been? What the fuck? The rookie scouting portfolio is at. Go to mattwalman.com. Order yours today if you haven't already ordered it. You survived the first week because you didn't sleep much, I know. You did what, like 8,000 podcast appearances?
I did a good bit. Did a good bit. We got a good bit more to go. It's fun. It's fun to get a chance to talk about this after you write all that shit. You
Right? You got
want
something to
it. You
say.
got something to say. You've been careful about what you're gonna say for all this time, and then you put it all down, and now it's like I want to talk about it. So I really appreciate those folks who let me do that.
Well, let's talk about it. We'll hit again. And if you don't know how to order, just go to mattwaldman.com. But we'll talk about that again in a little bit. And by the way, I'm Bob Harris. Hi, how are you? He's Matt Waldman, author
Hall
of
of
the Rookie
Famer Bob
Scouting
Harris, by the way.
Portfolio. I saw a story floating through my X feed last night that I was sure we would want to touch on today, and sure enough, we do. Are you feeling Merrill Hodge calling Drake May a potential coach killer?
I am actually,
I knew you were.
and I have a lot of respect for Merrill Hodge. I know a lot of people think of him as kind of a loudmouth ex-player who's kind of a curmudgeon,
He has strong opinions.
and he does. But his strong opinions have often been pretty good, and he's going to miss on some. But I think to call someone a potential coach killer certainly sounds inflammatory because it's a young guy getting in, heading into the league. But I don't think it's so much about that Drake May is a bad person. I think we need to understand that what Merrill Hodge is really saying is that Drake May's skill level is good enough that teams are going to find him appealing, but the NFL is bad enough at how they pick, develop, and force rookie quarterbacks into lineups who shouldn't be forced into a lineup. And that, as a result of that, the coach has to deal with the fact that there's an unready quarterback, unprepared quarterback, who's not who just does, who needs more time and isn't going to get it. And now the blame is going to be put on the coach when we all know that the system is flawed. And Drake May is that kind of player. He's a super talented athlete with toughness, arm talent. He's right out of Central Casting as what the robo quarterbacks are. But the problem is that the NFL has a lag between figuring out who really is worthwhile to play right away. And he's going to get drafted early enough that an owner is going to impulsively want that quarterback in there, and that coach is going to have to pay the price.
Feeling supply and demand, fucking development. It's like we see it every year. And so I guess like so we've heard a couple teams mentioned as having some interest in May. I mean, the top teams in play are obvious. The Washington, New England. It sounds like Minnesota's ready to move up, and like they've been connected to Drake May more so maybe to JJ McCarthy. Would McCarthy have a better shot at being a first year starter than Drake May?
I think he'd have a better shot of success as a first-year starter than May. May is the more athletic version of the big tough guy, but McCarthy's pocket movement and management are a little bit better, or actually a lot better in certain respects. So I think that I would rather go with the unproven vertical guy who's good in the pocket and has some high moments of processing than the guy who's unproven in the pocket in May. Or I mean, proven that he's not very good in the pocket, other than standing in there and taking a lot of hits, which we saw Sam Howell do. But I mean,
Right.
again, who also may have a good vertical game in some respects, but accuracy issues are also on display. I just think that there's a little bit. I think that McCarthy could probably realize his upside sooner and maybe deal with the pressure of being in the starting lineup right away. I don't want either of them in that situation, but McCarthy's the one that I'd go, okay, if you're holding the gun to my head and making me do this as a coach, that's the guy I'd rather have.
Yeah. And if you're the coach, your roster has players like Justin Jefferson, Jordan Addison, at some point TJ Hawkinson, and for the current season anyway, Aaron Jones. I mean, that makes these things a little easier. We'll see if they I'd
just want to channel my inner Steve Smith Jr. or Michael Westbrook as a coach and go in there and just pop off on the owner, you know, and then walk out of the building after they draft him. But, you know, that would be my inglorious exit from the NFL, probably.
So you may have outlined this already, but explain the differences between May and Caleb Williams in the pocket.
Yeah, I mean, pocket, you know, for a lot of people, they'll look at Caleb Williams, and I got this question today on the X app, which was, do you really not see that much of a difference between these two? It seems like every time I watch Caleb Williams, he's always outside the pocket and leaning a lot on his athletic ability. But if you take a closer look at Caleb Williams, what you'll notice is that when he moves outside the pocket, it's with a purpose where he's not inviting pressure. The pressure's already there, and he has to be dynamic. When he doesn't have to be dynamic and he can be efficient and climb the pocket and just take small steps where your feet stay under your shoulder so that you can deliver the ball, he does that very well. Drake May, in contrast, when the pressure comes, he's either standing in there and taking the hit, or he's turning his back to the pressure and rolling away, or he's flushing the pocket. And often all of those things that he's doing to escape are unnecessary compared to climbing. In the same way that Baker Mayfield wouldn't climb a pocket. And when climbing the pocket is the most efficient way for you to buy time, because you don't have to be dynamic with your movement. You can keep your eyes downfield. Your receivers don't have to reroute. And now you've saved a lot of time. And you're usually able to find an open man and read the field from sideline to sideline better when you do that. If you climb to one, if you flush or roll or turn your back, you're forcing your blockers to reset angles that they already had that were advantageous. You're creating a situation where now the pressure is chasing you and you got to stay on the run. You're going to have to reset. You're going to have to get your eyes back downfield, and your receivers are going to have to reroute. And that takes more time. It's less efficient. It's the last resort. Drake May is much more frequently doing that compared to Caleb Williams. When Caleb Williams does it, it's because he's really forced to. Drake May does it because it's a reactionary measure when he could have taken the more expedient route of climbing. So there's a big difference between those two guys, even though when you see a lot of highlights, it looks like Caleb Williams is running around like it's a fire drill, and he's completely panicked. That's not the case. So those are some things that just to keep an eye out for.
All right, so just like a kind of a little newsy development coming up here in the moment, and, you know, not a big deal, but I wanted to spin something off this. Roma Dunze visiting the Cardinals today. Our colleagues over at Football Guys, Sigma Bloom and Cecil Lammy, were theorizing the other day, as we are wont to do at these times. You know, got a couple weeks until the draft, and we can talk anything into existence. The thought was that, you know, Monty Osafort, as he did last year, might be willing to move down, then move back up, right? As Bloom called it, the Osafort. You know, he went down with what they went from 3 to 12 to 6 last year and ended up getting the guys they wanted and adding some draft capital. Bloom thinks it's possible, and I think Cecil agrees that maybe they prefer a different kind of receiver than Marvin Harrison Jr. Maybe they move down and move back up and they end up with maybe Roma Dunze, a bigger bodied kind of player that maybe kind of fits in the traditional mold. And I think comps they were throwing out were Larry Fitzgerald, DeAndre Hopkins. I don't know if they meant direct comps, you know, in terms of overall skills, but just in terms of the bigger, more physical kind of player. How do you feel about that?
I like it, because what's kind of funny is I actually think that the Marvin Harrison Jr. is more the DeAndre Hopkins, Larry Fitzgerald archetype physically and what he does well as a route runner. Whereas I look at Odunze as more of a Devontae Adams, more complete wide receiver type in that realm. So maybe they're moving away from the Larry Fitzgerald, DeAndre Hopkins, and moving more towards the complete option who can play all three positions if you need him and do everything you want from a primary. Whereas I think Harrison is a super great player who does things a little bit more limited. I mean, DeAndre Hopkins can't do everything on the field that you're looking for from a primary, like an elite primary, because he lacks great speed. But what he does so well, it compensates, and you can put him right up there. And I think that's where Harrison kind of is, whereas Adunze is a little bit less limited as a physical talent. So, yeah, I like that idea.
All right, so here's a little feel it or fuck it within the feel it or fuck it. This is the Stephon Diggs edition of feel it or fuck it within the bigger feel it or fuck it. So in case you might have missed it, people, Stephon Diggs was traded to the Houston Texans last week for a very reasonable sum, and kind of suggesting some of the issues that, you know, have been discussed, that maybe Stephon Diggs isn't the best guy to have around all the time, or maybe he doesn't always agree with circumstances that he finds himself in, or whatever the case. But they quickly moved on from him. The Houston Texans land him. So, you know, as you look at this kind of like right off the top, I mean, my spit take back in the napkin analysis was, wow, CJ Stroud now has a lot more firepower down the field. Feeling CJ Stroud moving up a bit in your rankings because of this?
Yes, because he's got really strong talent at wide receiver. And so when you have three startable wide receivers now in your base set, I mean, three guys who are capable of delivering top 24 production, that creates the stability that you're looking for a top five quarterback, whether it was Burrow with Boyd, Higgins, and Chase, or whether it's you know, Kirk Cousins with Hockenson, Jefferson, and
Addison
at least at the idea of that. Absolutely, you're going to be looking for someone of that value. And you know, I don't know who the best value is, and I guess maybe I'm anticipating. And anticipating what we were going to talk about there. So,
well, I let's get into it then. You got the three receivers right now. In early best balls, Nico Collins was going super, like almost for me, uncomfortably high. Like, and I get why, right? We're trying to be aggressive and project what the future's holding. And so, but he was going at the tail end of the wide receiver ones. Can't say that I've seen him get out of the second round in any of the 30 plus best balls I've done. So Diggs was going right around the tail end of round two, or even into round three, which I felt like was a value. We've discussed this before. I mean, you know, 5 years from now, are we going to be talking about that little blip in his career, or we're going to say, oh, remember when he fell off the cliff in 23, right? So, I mean, I kind of have been betting on the former, right? You know, 5 years, we said, man, remember that little downturn Diggs had? So I felt like he's been a value. Not so sure. Now, Dell's going late third, early fourth round. What kind of adjustments should we be making?
I think the biggest adjustment we should be making is that the priority player in the Texans offense is CJ Stroud. That's right. That's it. That, and then the rest, if you want to get cute, I would say that Diggs is the biggest gamble because of the age cliff. So really, if you're going to play the Bob Harris method, Tank Dell is probably the best value. And is the cheapest to go. And the other two guys, if they fall to you below what you have them in your expectation for your draft plan with ADP, then you go for them. I would say Collins is the safest because he's still the youngest, you know, but you may have to pay a little bit more of a premium with them. I'd take the chance on Diggs enough. If you're a like heavy baller, you know, drafting a ton like Bob over here, then yeah, you take the shot on Diggs because we know he's proven. Right. And the Bills are a little sour grapes mode with some of this because Diggs is the kind of the way they're talking about Diggs makes me laugh, because the translation for me is Diggs is a professional and would like his teammates to be professionals too, and wants to hold players who should be holding other players to a higher standard, Josh Allen, to that high standard. And I think he got sick of Josh Allen. And I think that, you know, Josh Allen's a great talented quarterback. He's a very good quarterback who can produce elite product numbers. But I don't know if he's necessarily the quarterback that, I think Diggs saw him and said, dude, you could have worked harder. You got Patrick Mahomes, you got Joe Burrow. Now there's Stroud. There's this Anthony Richardson kid as well. And there's Trevor Lawrence lingering around too, who's pretty darn good.
You better
catch up. Like you can't just lean on your athletic ability. You're gonna have to outwork these guys or work as hard as these guys. And I don't think that's there. So and I say that just based on people I've spoken with who say that that's been the concern. And I think Diggs, we touched on it last week. So for me, the whole idea of Diggs has hit a cliff. I'll test that notion this year
at the right price. I think I have a lot of shares of Diggs for that very reason, right? Like a guy who has consistently gone in recent years inside, in round one or not making it far into round two, finding him in round three is pretty irresistible for me. And again, so here's the thing, people. You can say, fuck that, Bob. I don't want to take a chance on that guy. Well, you know what? In best ball, you can take that chance. You just need a few good games. But also, there's a thing called mitigation. And when you take chances on players or you feel like you've taken chances on players, you can easily mitigate that risk by taking what you perceive to be safer players. I'm going to tell you something. It's March. It's April. We don't know. We don't know what the safe plays are and what the risky plays are at this point. So
that's right.
Taking some shots on guys at the right prices is what you're trying to do this time of year. Look, that changes as we get closer to the season. We'll be dialing it in. Joe Mixon has been going about running back 18. I think he's a great value. Volume is going to be there for him in this passing attack, and that's what he needs. His breakaway run rate notwithstanding, you give him enough chances and he's going to be fine. Dalton Schultz, I think, might be a beneficiary of this in that I think Stroud's price is going up. You can already see that reflected in the early best balls. Diggs, Collins, and Dell will all be driven down. I think Dalton Schultz will be driven down too, and maybe he should not, at least in terms of, having a solid enough role that will be fine. I don't know if he's a great best ball play or if he was ever a great best ball play, because I don't know if you get those huge spike weeks, but in redraft, I'm perfectly fine. On the other side of the ball, you mentioned Josh Allen. I know, the football guys, projections kind of forecast him still as a quarterback one, basically taking some of his numbers down a bit. Still, we're drafting all these guys, we're drafting at their ceiling. Is Josh Allen going to be quarterback one? Maybe so if he gets all his running touchdowns. Could Jalen Hurts be that? Yes, if he continues to get all his rushing touchdowns. Could it be Lamar Jackson this year? 100%. Could it be CJ Stroud? Absolutely, could be, right? So, probably less likely because he doesn't run, but I think, we're already drafting these guys at their ceiling. So, Josh Allen, do you feel like feel it or fuck it in terms of he's been going late second, early third. If this knocked him down around, if people overreacted to this or reacted to this in that way, would that be enough to say, might have a share or two?
Yeah, I guess so. If you like Josh Allen and you think that they're going to get a rookie receiver in Buffalo that has high value, potential high value, then yeah, I would say if they went early to the hole on wide receiver, that's possible. I also think that personally, I'm not touching Josh Allen. I'm not going anywhere near him. And I am going near some of his receivers. I think if Josh Allen fell to round 5 or 6, I would consider him, but I don't think that's remotely going to happen. So I think round 2 or 3, I'd much rather take a receiver or a running back or a top tight end, and probably not even that. It just depends on if it's a 1.5 PPR league.
You talked about, we'll get into the wide receivers there. You talked about the wide receiver that's not there yet. They picked 28th overall in the first round, I think 60 in round 2. Let's say they go in the first round. What kind of receiver would fit there and help Josh Allen?
I think really when you look at guys like Khalil Shakir, Matt Collins, and Curtis Samuel, Curtis Samuel is really a slot receiver. I think that's what he is at his best. I know that there's ways you could say he could be used outside in the deep game, but I don't think that that's really been accessed at its best. And also him staying healthy just seems like it's been kind of an off and on issue. Hollins is a classic X, a split end who wins balls, in tight coverage. But he's not a top route runner outside of zone. Shakir is an interesting guy. We'll get on more on him later because I think he can play slot and flanker really at a high level and will prove that. So really, to me, I think you want that classic guy like Brian Thomas Jr. who can be your A.J. Green-esque light, maybe AJ Green light type of player. Now you could also go just let's go big, but who can also give me some ability to win some tight throws like Matt Collins, but do a little more than Matt Collins can. And that's Keon Coleman. He could be a nice bargain for them. I would love to see Coleman in there. But then you could also go, you know, and if they go later, you know, they may be looking at Xavier Legette and thinking, okay, maybe we can get the most out of him, or Johnny Wilson, maybe in day two or day three, early day three, who is kind of a Brandon Marshall, you know, starter kit type of player, or a Javon Baker who could probably play all three positions. Those are some guys that I think fit what they have gaps with in their depth chart at wide receiver.
Yeah, Brandon Beat has said that will be a priority, so we'll see about that. I feel like the wide receiver one on this team is already there, except he's a tight end at his native. His name is Dalton Kincaid. We heard them talk last year. I heard you talk about Dalton Kincaid in glowing terms, but also the Bills, you know, talk in Buffalo of a Travis Kelce-like role. Does this open the door to Kincaid tapping fully into his potential?
If there's nothing behind the scenes that we don't know about, and the Bills have a clue, and I think they do, Dalton Kincaid is wide receiver one or wide receiver two in this passing offense as a tight end. He's one of the top two options for sure. You know, what they didn't exploit last year was that best two parts of his game are running after the catch when he's in the secondary, and his ability to win the ball in contested scenarios in the air. And they just threw a lot of flat routes and dump offs. They kind of like, you know, James Cooked him as a rookie, where they just kind of eased him in a lot. And I think that people, especially fantasy people who don't get the RSP or listen to our shows, I think they're going to miss out on the fact that he had the 12th best rookie season ever for a tight end. I think they missed that. They're just going to look and go, the buzz was so strong and Sam LaPorta was the guy.
That's the thing, right?
Yeah.
And also, you know, I mean, like, we keep plugging these oversimplifications in. Oh, Dawson Knox is the limiting factor. They're not. I mean, if you're viewing Dalton Kincaid as a traditional tight end, you're probably missing the boat, right? Yeah. I mean, like, thinking that he can't play and be effective with a tight end on the field. I know that, like, the evidence in front of you says, oh no, that's a limiting factor. That is, it can be a limiting factor. It doesn't have to be a limiting factor, no. People. We've seen teams have two very productive tight ends over the course of the history in the NFL. You know, no further than the Patriots, but others as well. So. Yeah. I mean, yeah, and it's just like, it's more about the role for me. And Kincaid, if he gets an opportunity to get the targets, be the playmaker in this offense, seems like they've set themselves up for this. And I suspect, again, something I talk about a lot is we see a tiny tip of the iceberg, right, on Sundays. We see, like, what, maybe 5 combined minutes of a player. The team is around that player 24/7, right? They know exactly what they've got. They know what they're doing. It was interesting. I wrote about it in the Fantasy Notebook this week about Jordan Love, and I've talked about it tons all the time. But a quote from, you know, Brian Gutekunst at the owners' meeting kind of, like, reminded me is, you know, he said, we've had this guy in the building for 4 years. We absolutely knew who he was.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's that, like, I don't want to oversimplify, but that is the point. I mean, teams know what they have in players, and sometimes the moves that we see that we don't understand are based on things that they know that they're seeing every single day in their locker room, in the film study, on the field in practice. So maybe that's something to take into account.
If I was going to argue against that in any way, shape, or form, it would only be that I would only modify it by saying, teams know what they have in their early round draft capital players.
Sure.
In the players that they acquire as free agents or label special teams, sometimes they don't. And then those guys surprise. But
they learn about them over time, right? Like, over the course of many years,
they should.
We think about all the players that we couldn't understand why Lamar Miller, why isn't he on the field more? Well, there were reasons beyond the fact that, yes, when you put the ball in his hands, he ran really well with it. There were other things he probably was not as well versed at. And probably the team at that time, Miami Dolphins, were well aware of what the weaknesses were.
Yeah.
Right. So I mean, I just think there's many, many examples of this, and maybe Dalton Kincaid is one of them. James Cook, by the way, I think, you know, this does nothing. He's already going as like a tail end running back one. How do you feel about him this season?
I feel pretty good. They're going to get a banger or a bigger guy with speed to also complement him, and probably maybe take away some red zone opportunity in certain short yardage looks inside the five. But I wouldn't say that it's going to take all of them away. And I think that Cook has shown that he has the ability to hold up between the tackles with a certain number of carries, and they want, and they understand how well he can be used. I think he's, last year was kind of maximum where his ceiling is, and I think we'll see that ceiling's kind of stay steady even with the, another player that they add to the mix, because whoever they add, I don't think they're going to add a Jonathan Brooks or right. a Blake Corum. So whoever else they add will probably be a complement who needs work as a pass protector before he gets on the field. So it kind of Cook's being pretty steady.
Yeah, interesting, by the way. I should note that he's, I want to say running back 12 on Underdog. He's a little lower on Best Ball 10s. If you're out there in multiple draft platforms, you can probably get him closer to the middle of the running back twos. So there's that. So, all right, so let's close out the in-episode Feel It or Fuck It of Feel It or Fuck It. With our discussion of, you know, you mentioned Samuel, Shakir, Hollins. What about Shakir in particular? Do you think, I mean, we view him as something, are we viewing him correctly? We're viewing him as like a slot guy, third down guy. Is there more to him?
Yeah, I think he could wind up being the number, I think he could be the number two or number three in this offense. And I wouldn't be surprised if it's Kincaid and Shakir, and you can get Shakir as the massive bargain.
Yes.
Because the rookie might not work out year one. They might not get the right rookie fit. They might wait longer because they feel like they could get a guy. You know, I could see Brandon Beanson, it's going to be a priority this year. And then they pick a guy in round three, round four, and say, it was a priority, but we had so much depth, this guy just kept falling. So we took our chances, and there were two or three guys we liked. And then it turns out that guy isn't all that strong and needs a little bit more time. Shakir is one of those guys that I believe can play flanker and be a starting flanker in the league. He goes up and wins the ball really well. He's a good route runner, excellent after the catch. I've always said he's kind of a less physical Hines Ward with more downfield speed and dynamic movement. But very tough at the catch point and has shown up in big moments for the Bills whenever they put him on the field. The Bills were kind of weird with him. They did, again, they don't like playing rookies. You can tell this with, you know, with Cook, Kincaid, and even Shakir, because Shakir lit up camp. Then when they put him in the in camp, though, he had some drops, so they started to get really cautious with him. But whenever they put him in the lineup, Josh Allen is targeting him on like difficult veteran type throws. Like, are you really, you know, we'll put it this way. You have the receiver like Quentin Johnston who gets, you know, thrown slants against zone coverage or thrown vertical shots where he's wide open on misdirection type of plays. Okay. Those are low difficulty plays. Khalil Shakir, on the other hand, is getting targeted on third down in a tight zone between a linebacker and safety against the Pittsburgh Steelers, and he has to jump up and make a basically back shoulder adjustment between two defenders and get ping-ponged off of them, and he wins those balls, whereas Quentin Johnston's dropping the wide-open balls. That's, to me, the difference of like confidence that a team has in a player, is one's getting a matchup caliber play, which is Shakir, and then the other one's getting these schemed up looks, which to me says the owner wants the schemed up guy on the field because they invest a lot of draft capital. The team for the Bills is like, you know, we think he needs a little bit more time, and Josh Allen is going, I trust him. Let's go ahead and target him in a tight coverage situation in a big down scenario as my second read and make him win it. And maybe I can show the team that we should get him on the field more. And that's what's happened repeatedly with Shakir. So I'm Look, I loved him, and I'm still all over him because nothing on the field has shown me otherwise.
All right, so that's it for our special in Field or Fuck It edition of Field or Fuck It. It's like a picture within a picture. The Stephon Diggs version is over. Back to the regularly scheduled programming. It's just some quick hitters, Matt, that I'm interested in. Josh Jacobs has moved well inside the top 10 football guys rankings. Is he inside the top 10 in your rankings now that he's a Green Bay Packer?
He probably will be, even with A.J. Dillon there. He's such a good pass receiver. He's an all-around back, and this team has the offense that's going to open things up for him. And I think that the defenses in the NFC North, you know, aren't all there at this point. So, yeah, feeling good about that.
Yeah, I did a piece on him as well, and I just thought some of the numbers were interesting. Jacobs actually has more runs of 10 yards or more over the last 5 years than Aaron Jones. Also has the same number of 50-plus catch seasons as Aaron Jones. I mean, it's just it's interesting. They're not the same guy, but the end results have been pretty good for Josh Jacobs. So I'm a big Matt LaFleur guy. Like, you know, just watching the Packers, I love the way he calls offenses. I think he'll make a great use of Josh Jacobs. Just talked about using him as a receiver out of the backfield. That sealed the deal for me. Jordan Love, I mentioned him a little earlier. He's going inside the top 10 of fantasy quarterbacks on early best ball. He's going around quarterback 9. Feel it or fuck it?
Yeah, I'm feeling it because it's on the back half of the top 10, so he's still a bargain, and he could easily be a top 5 quarterback if those receivers mature. If Christian Watson stays healthy and plays to like he did towards the end of the season, and then you add Reed and you know, Dubs into that equation along with what they have at tight end, it just gives you the stability you're looking for from a QB1.
So I don't want to overstate the case, and I'm not a fan of any team, but like competency matters, right? And I think, you know, I said this all along about Jordan Love. I mean, you don't let Aaron Rodgers storm out of the building, you know, your 4-time NFL MVP with a Super Bowl win under his belt without thinking you have a guy to replace him, because you're competent, not because you're the best team in the league or you're the smartest guys in the room, just because, you know, man, that's going to get me fired, right? And the same thing, to that same point, Gutekunst last year mentioned something back in June, like, you know, they didn't land a big name free agent wide receiver. And he just kind of like something there. Well, we think we have a really good cast of young receivers. We want them to develop with our young quarterback. Wow.
Yeah.
What a concept, right? Like letting them develop. That portion of that phrase is like, wow, what league are you in, sir? Because clearly it's not the NFL. But off my soapbox, this is one of the reasons. And by the way, all those receivers are dirt cheap right now. Jaden Reed going as a wide receiver 3 is the highest, you know, currently available, the most expensive and best ball.
Wasn't he like a wide receiver 1 down the stretch last year?
He was. He was. And if you're better, like, Dontavian Wicks is like wide receiver 90 something, you know, and like is a free square play. I will have many, many shares of him.
Yeah,
but
too.
you can get both Romeo Dubs and Christian Watson right now as wide receiver 4s. So, you know, there's plenty of values to be had there. Travis Etienne, not necessarily a value. He finished as running back 3, but his touches were way up. Doug Peterson keeps telling us that they want to decrease those touches, right? So we're drafting him as running back 6 right now, feel or fuck it, inside the top 10 for Travis Etienne Jr.
I would say he's at his ceiling of value right now, so I'm kind of saying fuck that, but not so much so that, you know, if he falls a little further, I would still take him because I don't trust Tank Bigsby. Tank Bigsby has a lot to prove in terms of holding on to the football, catching the football, making the right decisions between the tackles. So I don't know who they're going to have, you know, in addition to that. Devin Duvernay, who I was ragging on my buddy Bob Henry, who does the depth charts of football guys. Bob Henry is also, you know, he may not be officially a Hall of Famer in his own right, but he should be a Hall of Famer. He is, you know, Bob is fantastic with projections, but I think he still does the football guys depth charts, and I was joking with him this morning on a text saying, my man, what are you doing putting Devin Duvernay behind Tim Jones? He's probably right. But I was joking because I'm a big Duvernay fan.
I think that, you know, I think you're going to see some of these guys that have, you know, traditionally not been viewed more as receivers and return men be viewed more as return men.
Yeah.
Going forward, and with the change in the kickoff rule.
And if I'm the Jacksonville Jaguars, Devin Duvernay should be used a lot more in the backfield because he was a running back at Texas and a pretty good one and very good out of the backfield. He could spell, he could be that secret hedge to Etienne if Bigsby doesn't work out. And and I have concerns about that. So Etienne's not far from being like reasonable value, but right now, yeah, RB6 kind of fucked that.
Trevor Lawrence, far out. You threw his name out there earlier. I think I should look it up, but I want to say well outside the top, you know, 15 even. Let's see how far outside the top 15. Am I making this all up in my head? Trevor Lawrence, quarterback 16 on Underdog, and I think he's right in the same range on Best Ball 10. So I'll just get it here real quick. And yeah, he's quarterback. He's 15 on Best Ball 10, 16. Screaming value or fuck him?
Screaming value, narrative-based ranking because of the fact that he played behind an offensive line that hit him a lot, and there were some big mistakes that really were the difference between him being a solid quarterback and a solid quarterback one and what he was last year, which was a low-end guy, because of Bigsby fumbles, Bigsby's tips, a lot of drops, getting hit while throwing, a lot of interceptions that you would look at, as Adam Harstad would say, and say they would regress back to him being, you know, not as much of an issue. And while I'd like to joke, I would probably joke that having Gabriel Davis as one of your top three receivers might be a warning sign, but it didn't hurt Josh Allen, obviously, and Davis does offer value, and Lawrence can certainly exploit that. So I like it. I think the offensive line is going to be addressed this year in the draft, and there's a lot of decent offensive linemen that they can choose from. So I'm totally feeling him as a bargain QB1.
Just like we overdrafted him last year based on a strong finish in 2022, we are probably underdrafting him this year based on all those factors you said, but not looking at those factors at all and just looking at the end results. So I mentioned one Aaron Jones, now a Minnesota Viking. Is he a value at this point? And I'll bring up the numbers because that, you know, putting a little context on it. I get it. These are early best balls. All these numbers are going to change, people. We're playing right now, and we're kind of working on the values we have right now because that's what we have. But I think as we get closer to the season, you'll see these things dial in a little bit. Right now, Aaron Jones running back 18 on Underdog and probably about the same range, I want to say, on Best Ball 10s.
I think Aaron Jones is still a terrific running back. Aaron Jones could easily find himself in a DeAndre Swift scenario in Detroit a couple years ago where he's that guy getting a lot of receptions late in halves because the team is behind and the quarterback is overwhelmed and he's getting in that volume is making him a running back one. But I also am afeared, as people would say down here, I'm also a little afeard that that either happens early on and then teams take that away or he slumps early and then they start giving him a lot of opportunities in the second half. So he's one of those players that I think could ride a streak that could really help you but or hurt you, and depending on how you time it. So I'm a little wary about him in terms of that value right now. But you know, even so, I'd probably take the chance in some leagues because he's too versatile to ignore completely.
Yeah, he's down in that same range right now with Joe Mixon. I want to say, I'm just looking here, Mixon moved up a little bit on Underdog. He's up at the 17. He's down to 21 on Best Ball 10. So there's a lot of value in that range. Part of the reason why some of those guys are low is because other guys are high, obviously. Devon Achane is being drafted as a top 10 running back in early best balls. Feel it or fuck it?
Fuck it. I recognize the talent. I recognize the offense. But it's a little bit too much flash for me. I want to see him stay healthy for a season. Maybe that's a narrative thing that we should avoid. But I'm a little concerned about that. And I just think that he's one of those players that you're trying to predict something to happen that we haven't seen enough of yet. So I would, you know, look running back 10, that means that you're missing out on a good receiver, like a top receiver to get this guy.
Well, for a guy that we don't think is going to have a full-time role, because here's the thing. The Dolphins just paid Raheem Mostert, gave him an extension, $9 million. He's on under contract now through 2025. Fuck 2025. 2024 is coming. I mean, this, you know, Bloom talked about it in an article he wrote last week. Is this, you know, if you didn't think Mostert was going to play a central role in this offense, think again, right? Now you know for sure he is. Mostert's going in round 8 as running back 27.
I had Mostert last year at the end of a draft that I had won the league last year in a keeper league, and I drafted him late there, and I won it again this year, and I just sat on him all year basically until it was time to be able to use him, and it worked out, it timed out well because I had a lot of running backs that did get hurt, and then he came into the fray. Volume is a big deal with running backs. And I think that when we look at HN, it's up and down for him. And it's going to remain up and down for him to an extent. So I'm concerned about that. There's also a third guy in this backfield, and it's not Jeff Wilson, if you ask me, at this stage. I mean, maybe in August we'll be saying it's Jeff Wilson. But I think it's Christopher Brooks. I think Christopher Brooks is going to continue to surprise. And he's a free square for me.
They do love it.
Dontavian Wicks. They do. And when you watch that dude play, like I've said about draft stuff, when I watched Braylon Allen this year and last year, all I could think about is Christopher Brooks, man, if he was in that Wisconsin offense, would he have higher draft capital than people realize? You know, so, yeah, I'm not sure about that.
Interesting point. And, by the way, last year you were getting Achan slightly ahead. I think he was going like just inside the top 50. Mostert was going right about 50, running back 50, by the way, you know, like, yeah. So I mean, that late, and Wilson was going slightly later, so my plan to buy the cheapest piece in these cases did not work out last time, but I still had plenty of Mostert, and he was at that point a league winner. And I get it in Achane, you can pick him whenever you want in best ball, and he's going to have big games. But the opportunity cost, the as Matt said, the receivers you're missing out on who are going to be consistently more productive if nothing changes materially. Like, of course, and things could change, right? Like, somebody could get hurt. But,
talented but dude, now, just yeah. maybe not the most practical buy. That's really right. What it is.
All right, let's finish out with a couple of – has anyone heard of the Rookie Scouting Portfolio? It's a great book by one Matt Waldman. The author is very impressive. He's sitting next to me now. He's talking about rookies. He's quite smart about these things. Go to mattwaldman.com, buy the Rookie Scouting Portfolio. I would suggest getting the post-draft draft and the post-draft version of the Rookie Scouting Portfolio is when I come to life. Like, I'm sitting here reading and I'm getting up to speed on the knowledge of all these players that I don't watch any college football. This is ideal for you people. Let me just tell you how Bob Harris uses the Rookie Scouting Portfolio. I don't know dick. I mean, I literally am like a newborn child when it comes to rookies. I know the names. I'm starting to get a feel for things. Matt has organized the Rookie Scouting Portfolio in a way that I can get up to speed quickly on players, get good comparisons to them in short order, and then start digging deeper as I need to dig deeper. For me, a lot of the digging deeper, like, Matt's done all the groundwork. All the legwork's done, right? I don't have to sit here and know every damn thing about a player. I can wait till he puts a helmet on. I can say, oh, look, here's where he's at. How does he fit this team? All that information is available to you in the Rookie Scouting Portfolio. What kind of schemes they fit, what their skill sets are, how coach, everything you need to know about a player is there. So I highly recommend that. There is also a Dynasty component. Tell them what that is, Matt.
Yeah, you get I also do Dynasty rankings and projections for every player. So where's the $21.95 product, the pre-draft, post-draft is all about rookies and rookie drafts. Then what I do with the Dynasty projections component, which is a $24.95 product, is I give you a cheat sheet with tiered rankings for every seemingly conceivable player who's going to be on a roster, who I project to be on a roster. And then I also break down every roster with projections, and I update those multiple times a year between June and December. And you even get like a bonus one in June where I kind of remind the following June. So like if you subscribe in 2024, you'll get a June update. You'll get a couple updates in August. You'll get some updates in September. And then you'll get one in either, I believe, November or December. And then I'll do one more in June 25 to say, hey, you can get you can update and do this again in 2025 for the rest of the year. So I just kind of give you a nice, I look at it as kind of a freebie of saying, hey, resubscribe. So people really like it because it's short on the volume of content that I do in the rookie scouting portfolio, but it's but they I charge a little more because it's informed on all the work that I do based on the pre-draft and post-draft work, as well as all that time I study NFL film during the week. So you get, you know, you kind of get a short order form with that. And it's a great companion piece to both. So a lot of people who go, hey, you should charge double, I say, well, you know, just get the get the dynasty rankings and projections and get the pre-draft, post-draft. And you're basically getting, you know, four things in a service for about $50. You know, so, even less than that, $46.
So, you know, to me, I love all the detail stuff. But I mean, for like for what I'm sitting here and like I'm talking about a player 2 years from now, and I want to say, how come I didn't know this? I will often go back to that year's rookie scouting portfolio and say, oh, maybe I should have known this. And, right? And so it's all there.
And you're right, because I used to get a lot of, I don't get it as many anymore, but about 5 years ago, I had a lot of people go, can I just buy the post-draft? And I go, I understand. I really get it, but no. And you're going to like the pre-draft more than what you might think right now. And then they would write me back and say, yeah, like 2 years later when my league's like scrambling to find out about a player who just like changed teams and now is starting, I was like, I already got them before the waiver wire bidding war came up about them, because I preemptively picked them because of what you do. And it's the same thing that I show in the replacements oftentimes at footballguys.com. It's really an extension of the rookie scouting portfolio. Some of the stuff I do there is just from the studying that I do with the RSP, and you can have that before I ever get to the replacements.
All right, and if you are familiar with Matt's work, you realize that it's his work. There is no hive mind, no groupthink, no adherence to what the crowd is doing out there. So that being the case, and that means Matt has players ranked in places that other people don't have them ranked. So who is the player you're afraid you're too high on but you're sticking with?
Probably Keon Coleman. I really like Coleman, and I just know that if he lands on the wrong team, he's going to wind up being like a wide receiver, three, wide receiver four for that offense. And then it's going to, and that means he's not going to have much fantasy value at all. And he's going to tease you with big games or big moments, but not be as consistent. So if T. Higgins really wants to get out of like Cincinnati, I would love for Keon Coleman to replace him, because I think he could do as good of a job as T. Higgins, if not better in some respects. And I like T. Higgins, but if that's the case, that's where I would love to see him, because he'd have an anticipatory quarterback who would exploit his route running underneath. But if he winds up with a see it, throw it guy like Josh Allen, there could be a little more boom bust to his game.
All right. And so I have an email question here from a D May. Who is the player you're afraid you're too low on, but you're sticking with it?
D, it's not D May. That's awesome. That's awesome. Probably, oh boy, I would say probably Marshawn Lloyd of USC.
You're and way out on.
Yeah, because I have him as running back 14. But really, you know, I shouldn't even talk about the rankings because they suck.
Right.
But it's, I have a 78.9 score for him, which means on a 100-point scale, I see him as a contributor right now who could give you some starter-like skills where his strengths are. But the rest needs work. And the area that needs the work is the ball security. If his ball security were competent, he would probably be he'd be well inside my top 10. If his ball security were good, he'd be inside my top 5. And if it was great, he might be my number 2 running back. So the problem with it is none of us have really figured out whether what type of bad ball security is predictive of it to carry over to the NFL. Sometimes it really does carry over and it ruins careers or sets them back over a period of time. Sometimes they correct it pretty easily and we never hear about it as an issue again. If that's the case with Lloyd, he's going to be a top 5 running back from this class and possibly one of the 2 to 3 most productive out of this class because he has a lot of the skills that we're looking for. It's just you got to hold on to the ball, and right. if you can't do that, you could be you know, it's not like Adrian Peterson early in his career where he had like 12 fumbles in his first season, or I think he had 20 actually, 20 in his first season, and they were like, nope, we're just going to keep feeding the ball. Those days are over.
Right, like the one, and you can fix it. Tiki Barber would like us to know that you can fix those ball security problems and tight, high 3 points. Come on, kids. Fundamentals
Sony
matter.
Michelle.
All right.
Yeah.
Sony Michelle, one. Right. So yeah. So, all right. Very interesting stuff. Go get your rookie scouting portfolio at Matt Waldman on the Twitterverse. I am at Football Diehard on the X as well.
And he's awesome.
Whatever you like to call it. And you can find both of our works also collectively at footballguys.com. My weekly notebook is out every Monday, and a little news recap video out on Fridays that you can kind of catch up on everything you might have missed over the course of the week in like 10 minutes or less. It works. All right, that's it. So let's go do something serious. I'm gonna go watch the sun disappear.
Love you, bye.
Love you, bye.